When the campaign first started in 1866, it was very slow to develop. It began because one very new MP, John Stuart Mill, who was a philosopher, had just been elected as MP for Westminster. This was in 1865. And during his election campaign, he'd received a great deal of support from a group of women, radical women in their way, women who included Barbara Beaudechon, who was very instrumental in founding Girton College quite soon. So she was interested in the education of women. There was Elizabeth Garrett, who was just qualifying as the first woman doctor, and Emily Davis, who was the active founder of Girton. So there were women who were already very aware of the necessity for improving the position of women. Anyway, they'd backed Mill, and in 1865, and the following year, there was discussion underway in Parliament on about a new reform bill, and the idea was that parliamentary vote would be granted to a much wider section of the male electorate, but it was just to the male electorate, of course. And the women thought that while this was up for discussion, they would see if they could get women who had the same qualifications as men, these were qualifications of property, to make sure that perhaps they could be included in this new electorate. And Mill promised that if they could get a sufficient number of signatures to a petition, he would present it in Parliament. Anyway, in a very short space of time, they managed to get something like 1,500 signatures to a petition, and Mill duly presented it in Parliament, and it was greeted with some laughter and set aside. And needless to say, women didn't get any parliamentary advance in the 1867 Reform Bill. But the seed had been sown, and from now on, very slowly, the women, the ones I mentioned, came together, and this was in London, really, in the summer of 1866 or so, and they thought that perhaps they would set up a society to promote more petitions, really. That was all that they were thinking of doing. And the idea took root, and they managed to interest other people, other women, and the idea also spread to other cities, particularly Manchester was very keen, and societies were formed there and in Edinburgh and in Birmingham and Bristol, and then over in Ireland as well. And slowly they not only decided to present petitions, but they would hold public meetings. And this was a major step forward, because up to then, women hadn't stood up on public platforms and given any kind of talks, really, far less talking about improving their own political situation. And one of the earliest women to take to the platform in London was Millicent Garrett Fawcett. She was a sister of Elizabeth Garrett, who had been one of the women behind the first petition. And just around this time, although she was very young, she'd married the professor of political economy at Cambridge, Henry Fawcett, who was also an MP and a friend of Mill. So it was all part of this circle. And Millicent was one of the first people to speak at a public meeting in London. That was in 1869. And because she was very nice-looking and young and everything, it sort of rather beguiled the newspapers, who would want to jeer, but they were actually always quite polite about her. And it was in that way that the suffrage movement slowly advanced. Then through the 1870s and 80s, women travelled around the country holding meetings, and it was generally become much, much more acceptable. And one of the star speakers was a cousin, in fact, of Millicent Fawcett, who was called Rhoda Garrett. And she died young in 1882 and has rather been forgotten, but she was obviously an excellent speaker and quite charismatic. And one thing that in a speech that she made I always take to heart was that she railed against the fact that the idea that women shouldn't vote was so impossible to campaign against, because it was unconvincible, she said. It was prejudice was the only thing that stood between women and all these greater freedoms. And really, that's what the campaign in the 19th century effected, was to just the slow dripping onto the stone, wearing away at the prejudices that had been settled, I suppose, by the mid-19th century. So they had to change the attitudes of society to women. And part of the way this was done was to change the educational opportunities available to women. So with the founding of Girton and Newnham and Cambridge, it meant that a university education was then available for women. And then there were better schools were set up and then better regulated, so that they were allowed to take public examinations just like boys, so that they could actually have qualifications to show. So the educational situation improved. They also improved the legal position, in that the passing of the Married Women's Property Acts meant that when a woman married, she no longer had to hand over all her worldly goods to her husband. This was something that Millicent Fawcett particularly commented on, because she'd written several books, and yet the property of the copyright and the royalties belonged to her husband. Anyway, so generally, by the end of the century, both educationally and legally, and to an extent in tandem socially, women's position had changed. Women were much freer. They could move around more easily. I mean, they didn't need chaperones. They could go out on bicycles. And by the turn of the century, the suffrage societies had come together after a great deal of infighting one way or another. They'd managed to come under the umbrella in 1897 of the National Union of Women's Suffrage Societies, which was led by Millicent Fawcett. So she'd been there at the very beginning, and for 30 years she campaigned, and now at the end of the 19th century she was ready to lead the fight into the 20th.